How will free change the world? Come find out at the Ohio Linux Fest 2010, Saturday, September 11th and Sunday, September 12th, including a special early bird and medical tracks on Friday the 10th. And of course, the ever-popular OLFU is back. Attend as a supporter for a Special Collector's Ohio Linux Fest hemp t-shirt and catered lunch, or as a professional for the shirt, lunch, and OLFU courses, or simply attend as an enthusiast for free. Whether you're new to free software or a longtime pro, register now at ohiolinux.org.
You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat Davila. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
Excellent. How are you feeling? Hopefully better than...
Oh, man. We're a little late on getting this out because I've been sick for the last week. And let me ask you this. Who the hell gets sick in August? That's what I want to know.
Oh, plenty of people.
Know, it's this guy right here. Oh, man. It was bad. I was holding my daughter about a week and a half ago, and she was coughing. She'd been coughing for a couple of days, and I'm like, man, I better not get sick from
it. It's allergy season.
Coughing right on me. Yeah, and I ended up getting sick, and, you know, it was all over. It was my chest, it was my throat, my head, you know, I mean, everything. And I actually took a sick day, and it's been like 4.5 years since I've taken a sick day. So it was enough to kind of knock me out for a couple of days.
Yeah, it sucks being sick, and I'm glad you're feeling a lot better. But like I was saying, this is allergy season.
Yeah, unfortunately, my wife has it now, too, so...
This is the time of year where, like, you know, the hay fever and the ragweed and all that comes up, and everybody mm-hmm. in my house is coughing and sneezing. So it's not out of the realm of possibility of getting sick. Yeah, well, I'm glad you're feeling better, and,
Thanks.
And onwards.
That's right.
So what's new and exciting with you, Dan?
I am actually, right now, as we're recording this, I'm reinstalling Myth TV on my... The box that I have in my entertainment center, because I've been having some problems with the box that I use as my master backend server. The thing just for some reason just would all of a sudden up and freeze up. You know, it never. I mean, it's quick to fix, is reboot the thing. You know, but it never just seems to be so random. There's nothing going on. You know, sometimes I see if Miro's downloading something, it might cause it to happen. But otherwise, it could be sitting there doing absolutely nothing, and it would just freeze up. I'm guessing there's either a memory problem or maybe something even on the board or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds like hard one. When you get freeze-ups like that, it's usually hardware. Memory would be the first thing to check.
So I did. I tried swapping out the memory, and it happened more often than with brand new memory. So I there was something is not quite right there. I mean, maybe I can look and see if there's like a BIOS update or something like that. But right now, it's just that box. I don't trust the box to be running back there. I have my stuff, you know, stored on the RAID on that box, so that data should at least be held up. You know, should something happen, I can still get it back, even if the run live, you know, CD for a bit to get it to get that data off of there. But right now, I got to do something. That's why I'm moving everything over to the box in my entertainment center. That's going to end up being the master backend right now. I'm going to drop down to just three tuners, and I'm going to still have the front end up in the sunroom. So I may even end up throwing a recorder in that box at some point, or get a network based one like the Home Run. But right now that is installing as we talk. So
you know what, Dan? I think you need a TiVo Premiere from RCN. They finally announced that it's available
for
only.
I think I might just go and say, screw all this Myth TV.
For only $20 a month, you can get a TiVo Premiere, and you won't have to worry about anything. Everything's taken care of. Only $20 a month.
Only $20 a month.
So what does that work out to? $240 a year.
There you go. On top of what you already pay for the damn service.
Yeah, that's a great deal. I don't know. If you're a lazy bastard, and you don't want to be freaking bothered, and you want, you know, go do that. I don't know. Honestly, I have minimal maintenance on my myth boxes. You know, once I set up the box, it's pretty much running, you know?
Oh, yeah. Unless you get a hardware issue, and you would have that with anything.
Yeah, that happens with any computer.
Or anything.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I've had the same enclosure here in my entertainment center, and I think I'm on, like, my third board maybe now in the last 8 years, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, hardware does go, and that's just a fact of it, you know? And there's, or you get, like, a power surge or something like that. Now, I run all my machines, my desktop, all my Myth TVs and whatnot, all are on backups units. I get those, like, 15-minute ones, you know, from, like, Office Depot or Staples or whatever, and that usually protects them, for the most part, from anything like that happening. But there's still, if something's connected to, like, the cable modem or the router or something like that, and you can still get a surge through one of those lines as well.
Oh, yeah. The most common problems I've ever encountered with any computer hardware, number one problem is probably the power supply goes. You know, you buy a box, you usually put the cheapest, crappiest power supply in there, and that's the first thing that dies. And you wind up replacing that.
Yep.
Now, if you're lucky, it doesn't fry your motherboard in the process when it dies. So it's just a power supply.
That's what happened to me the last time.
Yeah, sure. And then, you know, you're basically starting over from scratch, you know? But usually that's the first thing. Another thing that usually goes is memory. And sometimes some of the symptoms that might happen is you get lockups like you've experienced. other symptoms are, you know, the thing will hang, you know, periodically.
Right, yep.
You know, it boots up in some weird state. You know, you'll get like beeping. You know, the thing won't boot up and it'll just start beeping like crazy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Heat issues. And
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Some of the other things that I've had an NVIDIA card die on me once, where.
Oh yeah.
With stuff that needed 3D acceleration, it would just lock up. But if I was just doing regular 2D stuff, it worked perfectly fine. I still have the card here, and I just keep it around as a backup in case my other video card dies, but. Haven't had the need to touch it again after I replaced it. So, but that's a weird thing, though, you know.
I've actually heard something similar about that lately. It's not what is Apple using now? I think they use ATI cards in all their machines.
I have no idea.
Certain
you're asking the wrong
models,
person.
I know, but it just comes across over things like Engadget and stuff like that. But there were certain models. I think it might have been of one of their newer laptops or whatever. If you're playing certain games on it, it was actually melting the bottom of the thing. So, and it was all stemmed around, I believe it was from the video card. I could be wrong about that, but I believe it was the video card was overheating to the point where it was melting the bottom of the casing. So.
Yeah, I mean, that, to me, those are the most
happens,
common things.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Well, other news that's come down the pike is Silicon Dust, the people that make the HD Home Run, which is a great box, and we really love, you know. Lately, there have been some really nice sales on those HD Home Runs for under $100 a piece.
You posted one the other day. It was like $97.
Great, great device. I highly recommend people get the HD Home Run. Part of the reason that I'm hearing is that they're getting ready to roll out this new box called the HD Home Run Prime. Okay, with the difference between this box and the old HD Home Run was the HD Home Run will let you do over-the-air dual tuners or QAM if you have unencrypted cable channels. What the HD Home Run is going to do is supposedly it's going to be a dual tuner cable card device. Now, cable card and Linux have not played nicely, and the reason being is there's all sorts of DRM flags and whatnot that the content providers want the devices to be able to recognize and don't let the person watch it on other devices. If it wasn't recorded on that device, it won't let you play it back if it's only been played back once, that kind of thing. It's basically a broadcast flag that they've, you know, that they voluntarily asking the cable companies to have on there and different commercial DVRs to recognize. Now, I believe the only DVR system that recognizes these things is Windows Home Media Edition, I believe. I don't think Sage TV plays nicely with cable card either, even if it's based on a Windows-based system. You know, correct me if I'm wrong if people are running Sage TV on Windows and that's not the case, but from what I've read, that is the case. Well, anyway, So this device was going to be, you know, just going to be a Windows-only system that would be able to run on Windows Media Edition. And one of the things was that, you know, the whole DRM thing. But what I'm hearing now is there's a good possibility that it might actually work with Linux. And you might be able to stick cable cards in there and be able to record shows on there. So it sounds like there's hope, possibly. And I think the reason why that's the case, if I'm not mistaken, is the version of the DRM that they're using actually is a little less restrictive than what they've used in the past. If I'm mistaken, that's the case. Do you know anything about this, Dan?
I've heard a little bit about it. What I saw was that the initial testing and whatnot, it seems to be working, but I think off the bat we're going to be limited in the number of channels that we would be able to get over it. Like, it's probably going to be just some basic, you know, programming channels, and until the support comes so that you can get everything, you know, I would, you know, probably hold off on that.
Oh, absolutely. Don't buy this thing right away.
You're going to be paying $9 or $13 a month to rent that to get channels, you know, ABC, CBS, Fox, you know, PBS, you know, those types of things that you could get for free over unencrypted CAM anyway.
Well, so what I'm reading is they have this thing called Copy Freely, and it's a designation that the cable companies mm-hmm. give to certain channels. And I supposedly, from what I've read, there's like three levels of DRM or copy protection on there. There's the unencrypted stuff, which we can record. And then there's these copy freely channels, which is like a middle tier. And then there's one more higher than this. I think it's only like watch once or something. And I think what it is the copy freely channels are anything besides what they consider premium movie channels like HBO or Showtime.
Okay.
That's what I'm hearing. Right. So if it's anything besides those movie channels,
well, that would be great.
I might be willing to get it if I can get all the other channels. And I can just record off those channels using my PVR 1212 box. You know, right now the PVR 12 is my main capture device, and I can record any freaking channel I want
because
it's coming off the component off the cable box. You know, and if you got satellite, that's the only way to do it. But if this is like a middle tier where we can record like other channels besides just the basic over-the-air channels, like, you know, stuff like, I don't know, Food Network or some of the sports channels, you know, some of the, like, you know, the, you know, I might be willing to get it.
That would be incredible.
I might be willing to do it and rent the stupid cards from the cable company for $8 a month or whatever for two cable cards. I might try it, you know, but I recommend everybody hold off, you know, wait till we hear from people using the Linux.
Yeah, we got to wait a revision or two to see what is actually, you know, being, you know, realized with this device, but it will be something if it's possible.
Yeah, we'll see, and probably, you know, that copy freely designation, it might vary from cable company to cable company, so. It sounds promising, and it sounds like cable card might be able to be used in Linux, which is kind of nice if it pans out. It basically, you'd be able to do kind of like what the TiVo Premier does, throw a couple of cable cards in there and be able to record two shows at once. So that's something to keep an eye on, and we will.
Did you see that device? Right now it's Windows only, but I imagine at some point somebody's going to get it to work if we can use cable cards. There's a device coming out. It might actually already be out, but it allows you off of one cable card connection to record up to four different channels.
Actually, that thing has four cable cards in it. I know the device you're talking about. If you subscribe to
This is a PCI Express card that you stick in, and you put in one cable card, and it'll allow you to decrypt up to four channels at once.
Are you talking about the Seton quad cable card tuner?
That might be it.
Yeah, that card has physically four cable cards you can stick in there. It's a PCI Express.
No, it's a PCI Express card.
But you stick four cards in there.
Four cable cards in that.
You stick four cable cards in there. It's a $400 device. Here, I found a link.
Oh, it's expensive.
I found a link off of GeekTonic. If you go to GeekTonic.com and you do a search for Seton, Ceton, quad cable card tuner, supposedly it's out, but it's very, very buggy from what I'm hearing for Windows. But yeah, if you're able to do the cable cards and the Linux, I'm sure somebody will write drivers for that thing. That thing looks like a friggin' beast.
Yeah.
You see the picture?
Yeah, it's a piece that you're sticking in it.
Yeah, it comes off of one coax connection, but you physically have four cable cards in there.
Not the card that I'm looking at.
Which one are you looking at?
Yeah, I found this site here. I'll post this over to you. Look at that one.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it says the first version of the Seton card is a four-tuner cable card device.
Yeah, four tuners.
The four shows all on this one card.
Ah.
Encrypted digital.
I think they're talking about the actual physical card. Can you do four recordings off of one cable card?
Yes. You should be able to do four recordings off of one cable card. But right now, it's Windows Media Center only, so I'm hoping that this at some point gets opened up if we can actually record.
You're right.
These cards.
One of the link off of that says one cable card. You're absolutely right. It's a $400 device, though. That's expensive.
Yeah, more than probably my machines cost individually.
Yeah, yeah. I would probably lean more towards the Silicon Dust device because they have a very good track record, especially when it comes to things like Linux. They seem to be very supportive of Linux. So if it's working on Linux and the drivers are working, a dual tuner would probably be more than sufficient.
Yeah.
And it would probably be in that $200 range, I would guess, because that's how much the HD Home Run was originally. It was in the $250 range when it first came out. So my guess it would be somewhere similar. So we'll see about it. We'll keep our eyes on it and see how that pans out. Hopefully it works out. What else? What else you got, Dan? How's development on your application going?
Well, aside from the last week, it was going pretty good. I got a number of people all trying it out right now. There's probably about 6 or 8 people, I'd say, that are trying it out. Peter64 has been trying it out on a tablet device. We got a little work to do to get the video encodings down correct for a device that size. I'm trying to think I think it was a 5 or 7 inch tablet that he has. So he has the back end. I made some fundamental, some low level changes to what I was doing. Previously, I talked about MythXML, and I was talking directly to MythXML through web services to get the data out of the back end system. Not really secure. I don't want to see, considering I want this thing to run over, 3G as well as Wi-Fi. So if you're out somewhere, you want to be able to just quick pop something up for, watch it for a little bit. You can stream it, no problem. In order to do that originally, you had to expose port 6544, which is the Myth backend, protocol. The Myth protocol runs on that port. It's an HTTP server that feeds out the MythXML interface. And you could actually get in there and set properties and do all kinds of stuff over that port. I don't want that exposed. I don't want that exposed over the port. And a lot of the people who have been trying it out came back saying, yeah, this is kind of a security risk here. So what I ended up doing was incorporating a lot of this stuff into MythWeb, which already is doing a lot of that information. It's written in such a way so that when you look at, like, say, the recordings page, the recordings page is just a theme on the recorded.php file. There's a template directory in there that then displays everything, like the whole grid of the shows, delete and re-record, those types of things, all the data about that. When I started digging into that a little bit, I found that I could create my own template. There, if you go all the way to the bottom of the page, there is an RSS link. So you can pull back RSS data from this thing. I wrote a JSON one. JSON is JavaScript Object Notation. It's very easy for, Android, Java on Android to parse this information. I don't have to write a full-blown parser like I did with the XML, which is nice. Excuse me. I can call this service that I wrote and get back a full blob of all the data and only pull out what I need and pass that around. I don't need to maintain the whole thing throughout the entire session that you're actually trying to do stuff, which could get a little, bloated and heavyweight after a while. So what I've been doing is I've been changing out parts of MythWeb. I've been talking with actually some of the MythWeb, you know, developers out there on IRC, because there was a bug that the IRSS piece wasn't working correctly. Once I found a bug to get that fixed, it's not quite what he wants to do with it, but he's going to end up rewriting some of that at some point. So I will have to kind of get back and get back to this piece of it, and maybe rewrite a little bit, tweak it a little bit. But after it was connecting to JSON instead of talking to MythXML, I was actually able to streamline a lot of what was going on inside of the Android code as well. The Java, you know, dropped in size considerably. You know, when I was no longer requiring a full blown parser for the back end. I'm sorry, to read the back end data. So that ended up working out great. I also wanted to try that, you know, MythWeb has some streaming capabilities already built into it, and I wanted to try to get something along that line working as well, so I could just put this right into MythWeb. You could then go to it from a browser if you wanted to stream or not. You'd have lesser quality, of course, on a bigger screen like that, like a desktop screen or something like that. But unfortunately, I can't find a codec that Android supports currently that will allow you to stream on the fly other than Flash.
H.264.
You can stream it on the fly. Yeah, you can stream H.264 in Flash on the fly and convert it from your NUV files or your MPEG files or whatever format you happen to have it in already on your system.
H.264, can I just jump in for a second?
Yeah, go right ahead.
H.264 is mostly what's on YouTube is. And most of the mm-hmm. Android devices, you know, the phones and whatnot, have hardware decoding capability built into the thing. So that's why you can go to YouTube and stream a fairly good quality video onto your phone, and it looks good. So that's H.264. Mm-hmm. And I
believe I heard that they are doing H.264, but they're packaging it up in a 3GP container for the mobile handsets, which is what I was trying to do in the first place. I wanted to convert the file on the fly to 3GP and pass that out, and inside of that you could stick in, you know, an H.264 or an MPEG-4. You could put in any I always kind of get this part of it mixed up, but you can use those codecs inside of that container and pass that along. However, it does not allow for encoding and streaming on the fly. So I'm still stuck with you have to have a job set up to transcode recording. Yeah, a user job set up to transcode your recording and use something like the Darwin streaming server to actually serve out the streams to you. For right now, that's what I'm kind of stuck with. Now that Android will shortly be supporting Flash, you know, in the Android 2.2 devices, I could actually incorporate the existing stream that's out there, and I might end up doing that. You know, if you have an Android 2.2 device,
I think that's what you want to target, because I've had 2.2 on my Nexus One for a while now, and it works very mm-hmm. well. I'm not the hugest fan of Flash, but if you're on a website and there's video content on there, it's nice to be able to watch it with, you know, without having to do anything special. And, you know, example being, you know, the ones I've used is like ESPN or whatnot, or even sci-fi.
Right. Now, I've run the YouTube app on my Droid X, and that thing works great. You know, the quality, you know, comes out awesome. It is Flash. It can handle the hardware. It can handle it with 2.2, though. However, I should be getting 2.2 in like the next week or two, I think. I heard the last early September, they said, for the Droid X. I think I will be able to rewrite some of this stuff with that in mind, and then I don't need any extra special things like the Darwin streaming server or the user job or anything like that. So that will be something that I'm going to look at you know, as soon as I can get an actual device that I can run it on, because you can't actually stream or play any video in the emulator. It doesn't. There's no video playback in the emulator, so it doesn't allow for that.
Yeah, so you have to do your test it on your device.
That's what I'm going to do with that. Yeah, I actually have to have the, you know, put the APK file right on there. Use the MythWeb services that are already being sent out, which is very easy to generate the correct URL to push out a video. If that's the case, it makes this app a whole lot simpler. You know, with the, you don't, none of the back end stuff, and that's ultimately the way I want it to go, is use what I can serve off already from the web server that I already have in place and display it on any phone that's out there. But that last statement is kind of wrong, because at that point it will be any phone that supports Android 2.2 and greater.
Yeah, you know what? That's your baseline, that's what the reality is. And I think as long as you're upfront with everybody, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, if you have a website, this is only going
to
work if we're a 2.2 or greater device, and just leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, I could always leave this other piece in there as an option if you want to set up the streaming server itself and the user job and all that stuff. You know, I actually wrote a nice little script that allows you to go through and as you delete files, you know, delete a recording on the front end, it'll go and delete the 3GP file then, you know, cron job runs and cleans all that stuff up. So, I mean, all of the pieces are in place. I just need to kind of find a good way to package it all up. Because right now I did have to do quite a bit of tweaking to get the MythWeb to recognize that there is a new, you know, JSON handler out there to...
You're going to have to script it, probably.
It's going to have to be scripted.
You're going to have to script the shit out of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have some pretty good instructions. If you saw the last zip file that I sent to you and the rest of the people, I basically set up a zip file that, or, you know, some type of an archive that has instructions that at every step in the directory is where you need it to be. That's not what I want.
No.
I want to be able to just hand it off to people and say, run this, it'll install it, you know?
You're going
to
need either a Bash or a Python script or a Perl script.
Yeah. What I would like to see happen is I want to get the JSON, you know, templates that I'm building and get them actually incorporated into MythWeb so that they get pushed out with MythWeb. So then there's nothing you need to do because the stuff will already be working. So that's something I'm going to try to get on. I'm going to talk to the dev again, see if there's anything that I can do to get this information, you know, to him or somehow committed to the MythWeb stuff, and then it would just be pushed out automatically, and you'd have access to it.
Well, sounds cool, man. I'm glad you're making progress and, you know, coming on different things, and it's not easy.
But this actually opens up. It opens up, you know, I was talking with Peter64 on IRC because he had this tablet. We were trying to get it to work out. As soon as I can get back with him now, because like I said, I've been pretty much out of it for the last, you know, week and a half now with the way that I had been feeling. He's been running into some issues with the tablet itself. Now, I don't know if this is specific to Android 1.6, which is what's running on the tablet. I believe that's what he told me. He's going to actually run the application, you know, tethered to his machine with the emulator running, but using the device of the emulator, and we're going to try and capture exactly what's going on with this exception that he's seeing, because it's not an exception that I've come across, and I've tried it on, you know, in the emulator, two different handsets, and I've had other people try it out too, and they haven't run into those issues as well. So it might be something that's specific to the tablet that he's running on. So I'm going to try and work with him to get that up and running and hopefully clean that up as well. So otherwise, it seems to be going really well, and the people who have tried it all have been, you know, have liked the functionality. There's other stuff that I want to do. But he also then, you know, emailed the both of us regarding Android as a actual front-end device. And that's what I kind of also want to talk about a little bit, because I guess I just want to open up the dialogue at least to see, you know, what we think could potentially happen here. You know, I'd like a nice, you know, 7-inch or maybe, you know, maybe a little larger pad.
I was going to say, are you talking about a phone or are you talking about a pad-like device?
No, I'm thinking a pad-like device. Not necessarily, I mean, a phone could do it as well, But, you know, Java on Android can do this stuff as well. I already know that I can talk to MythXML, so I can get access to all the data. The problem really becomes is getting the video down onto the device.
Right.
There are only a certain select few, video streams and audio streams that Android currently supports. Now, WebM is supposed to be enabled by the Gingerbread release, which will be Android. It's still Android 3.0, but that'll be one more. And I don't know if that codec is one that we could convert and stream on the fly as well. I mean, I'll have to do a little digging into that.
Supposedly, that's on the way. WebM. If you go to like YouTube, a lot of the videos are encoded in WebM now, and you could see.
Right.
It looks really nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. Although now, just today, the MPEG LA, group that has is the custodian of H.264 said that they are never going to charge patents or enforce patents on people and royalties, licenses.
They have to do that, otherwise they're up the creek without a paddle.
Exactly.
But come on, they don't do that. They're screwed.
Yeah, I know. They have to. But right now, Android only supports H.263, H.264 AVC, and MPEG-4 SP, and soon it will support WebM
and Flash
and CC8 codec
in the browser.
And Flash, and it will support Flash in the browser. Yep. So.
Well, it's also going
to
be able to support Adobe Flash apps.
Say that again.
It's going to be able to support Adobe Flash apps pretty soon too, right?
Yeah, through Adobe Air.
Yeah, right.
There should be a native Air client running on there. If it's not already, it should be running very shortly, I believe. Which is kind of interesting as well. You know, you could actually set up a server, another server alongside or somehow incorporate it into MythWeb and serve it out that way. These three codecs that I had mentioned, the file types that they support are 3GP and MP4. But right now I don't have any way to convert these things on the fly.
On the fly, yes.
And be able
that's
to deliver
them.
That's the key.
Yeah, the other
to be able to convert it on the fly.
The issue is that you got all different devices and different resolutions. Like, my Nexus One doesn't have the same resolution as your Droid X, and that doesn't have the same resolution as someone with a Samsung Galaxy.
Right. But see that's where like 3GP has a specific format of, I think it's 352 pixels by 288 pixels. It's called CIF, C-I-F. And that format seemed to work on any device that I tried it on. And now, granted, it wasn't the highest quality, and the audio was stuck at like 800,
Yeah, that's the thing. 8, 000, a lot of these new
kilohertz,
these new devices, man, they have nice displays, and they can handle pretty high-resolution video,
Right.
And you kind of want to be able to do that high-resolution stuff if you can.
Right. And believe me, I want to get it as high a quality as I possibly can. I wanted to start out at the very base minimum, but allow you to go up to that if you wanted to. That's why having the user job makes it kind of nice, because you can make the format be whatever you want it to be, so long as it, it passes along, the file has an extension that the app knows about that it can read. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Now, Gadget Wisdom, he had mentioned to me about, being able to just download on the fly if need be. But I would like to be able to do that, but you still would have to convert it. You know what I mean? And I really want to get away from that conversion.
Re-encoding,
I can't push 9 gigabytes or whatever, some of these file sizes are, wirelessly to you. That's just going to be,
It's got to be specific for a mobile device, You have to bring it down.
Yeah, so Android tablets as a front end, yes, I think they will be able to do it, but not anytime soon, I don't think. And until we get some better streaming formats that onto the device. I don't know. I saw that the Samsung Galaxy, the Galaxy phones have been rated now for DivX playback. So
yeah, actually,
I don't know if that would be an option.
Actually, there's an external player on my Android phone. Mm-hmm. There's an app for it that lets you watch DivX or Xvid videos that are direct rips from DVDs, okay?
Yeah.
Pretty high quality format without having to re-encode it. And I can tell you that it works. I have it on my phone. I've taken rips from some DVDs that I have that are in DivX or XVID, and I don't have to re-encode the damn thing. It plays back seamlessly on my phone in nice quality.
Wow.
No glitches, no stutters, nothing.
Yeah.
It's a separate application that you need to – it's a special, just, you know, specific video player just for DivX and VidX files.
But is it a format that I can, you know, encode on the fly and stream?
You know, again, it's a question of codecs, you know. You got a format.
Yeah.
You got a resolution. You got a codec resolution. The only reason why I wanted to use it, because for quite a long time, I was doing my rips in DivX and XVID. Mm-hmm. You know, you would get good quality video – fairly decent size files, not too large. You know, I could do like a standard def DVD with of pretty damn good quality video for around a gig in size for a file for like a 2-hour movie. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I threw some of those videos that I have in those formats. They look great and they play back great on my Nexus One. I'll tell you what the name of it is.
That's something that we can see.
I'll tell you what the name of it is. I think it was. Hold on a sec. Give me a second. I'll find it for you.
Okay. But I think, though, the Android tablet as an interface to MIF TV would work fine. I mean, you know, Tom Kenny has the MIFMote application, and we know that that works really well. We know that we can get access to all the XML data and the guide data and whatnot through MIF XML. We could have it set up so you can get a nice little grid, you know, going so you can set up recordings, potentially manage the recordings that are out there, maybe use it to stream audio in the meantime. Video, not so much, though. But otherwise, you would be able to get access to everything that is available, I think, on MIF TV on one of these devices. A little small is the phone. You know, the phones would be a little small to do, like, the guide data or anything like that, because... Otherwise, unless you're showing a very tiny grid, and then you're kind of scrolling through everything, and that could kind of tax the phone a little bit, with, you know, depending on how much you want to show and how much it needs to process on each one of those scrolls. But otherwise, I think on a tablet device, we should be able to get a decent interface, you know, up and running relatively quickly. I mean, I've been able to get it, on the phones now as it is relatively quickly. And so I think doing a full-blown MIF TV front end, once the video codec support is there, would definitely be an option, and it would be something that you could just have in your house and be wherever you're at, set it up in your kitchen, you know, take it to the bathroom with you if you want to, you know, I mean, do whatever you want to do, but you'd still be able to eventually have all of that on an Android phone, I mean, on an Android tablet. And that Samsung Galaxy tablet that's coming out now is looking as a nice option.
Yeah, that is one of the ones that's highly touted. Some of the Dell, the Dells are coming out. They've got one out supposedly.
Dell Streak, I believe, just came out. Yep.
Yep, and then there's a couple other ones. Okay, the app that we were talking about is called Rock Player.
Rock Player.
Yeah, and it's mostly for it does DivX, XVID, Mistrika, MPEG-4. AVIs, yeah, well, AVI is just a container. Mistrika, yeah. DivX XVIDs. And everybody's saying the quality is very good and it seems to work excellently. So, check that one out, Rock Player. I have it on my phone and it works great.
I'll have to load that up then.
So, you can get a video that's like a gig in size. What you got to do is you got to copy it locally to your storage on your phone and you can play it from there. But it works excellent. It's excellent. Absolutely excellent. Check it out.
Okay.
You know, but the thing with that is it's still a codec, and it's still out of, you know, a certain resolution and a certain quality, you know? You know, right now I'm mostly doing HD recordings, so, you know, I have very large files in high resolution. You know, you'd still need to re-encode it. You can't get around that, you know? Have you read up on any of the documentation on the official Google site about video codecs?
Oh yeah, that's what I was reading from. Just
that's where you were referencing
a minute ago. With what it actually supports right now, and the IRC channel for the Android developers is just there's just too many people in there. I ask a question and you know, there's so much stuff flying by on it. It all kind of gets lost in there. So I'm trying to see what other people, if anybody else is doing anything like that. But so far I haven't been able to find anybody doing anything. Maybe I have to contact these rock player people and see if they can open up their API.
Yeah, that might be something to do. You know, that would get, you know, again, it goes to, you know, resolution and codecs and whatnot. You know, what you're recording to and what you need it to be. And, you know, you still hit that obstacle of having to re-encode to a different format and a different resolution.
Exactly, and that's what I want to avoid.
Yeah, that right now that might not be doable. Yeah, but as far as, you know, a pure Android app as a front end, yeah, it's absolutely doable. You know, someone would have to code up, you know, a whole new interface for it, you know, specifically geared towards Android, you know, and then, you know, just the codec and the formats of what the video's files are, and those are your two main concerns, really. You know, do you have to have everything automatically re-encoded to a certain format? I should talk to? I should talk to Dan Dennity. You know who Dan Dennity is?
No, I don't know who he is.
Dan Dennity is the guy who wrote Kino. Remember Kino, the video editor for Linux?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, he works for a company that does streaming to phones. And I should get a hold of him and talk to him about it. I bet you he can offer a little bit of insight to this whole deal.
Yeah, that would be great.
That would be somebody to talk to. So I guess we could talk about some other emails that we got for some listeners while we're at it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You mentioned Peter64 and doing an Android front end. And helping you test this thing. We had an email from B. Alexander. He was setting up a system for the first time, and he was coming up upon an issue where his shows weren't recording. And Dan, you mentioned in the pre-show that you had talking to him. You've been trading some emails back and forth.
Yeah, we had gone back and forth. I actually need to get back in touch with him because I think I still owe him an answer to a question here and there. But you know, he was having some trouble. We were going back and forth. He couldn't get certain things. Let me see if I can find the email here real quick.
His initial email sounded like his video card, his capture cards weren't configured properly.
That's what it seemed like. I'm trying to. We went back and forth a bunch of times, and I still have to email him back.
Was he able to get his recording stuff sorted, or
he was getting it to a point, and then he was having some issues. I'm trying to think. What was it?
What kind of setup was he using? Was he using PCI cards? Was he using PVR 1212?
He was using the 150, the PVR 150 cards, I believe. He's not in an area. Well, where he's at, even though the digital transition took place, they still broadcast, you know, the channels, you know, once they come into the house, they're still able to get access to it. So I don't know if they just didn't shut off the feed where he's at, but he's able to, you know, connect and connect and record, you know, to those channels without having an intermediary box. We don't have that luxury on RCN here, but actually I did do some checking. Service Electric allows you to do that still.
Yeah, so they haven't cut it over yet.
Another one that runs down a block away from me, you know, and I can't get it at my house for some reason.
I had Service Electric when I first moved into this house, and Service Electric is a small cable company, a regional cable company in this area, and they were okay for it. You know, they definitely would go down more often than RCN. There were definitely more outages than RCN ever had. Their web stuff was pretty good. The quality was decent. It was pretty fast. Yeah. The only negative was initially it was a one-way kind of a deal, so you had to have a regular modem for all your upstream stuff, and it was a pain in the ass. Okay. And eventually they upgraded it to a two-way setup, and they never told anybody about it. The only way I found out about it was somebody new in the neighborhood had moved in, and they had two-way. So, you know, they never sent a letter out to any of the customers telling that the two-way service was available, and they didn't need the regular modem for the upstream stuff. But other than that, they were decent, you know. They didn't have as big a selection as RCN as far as the channels that you can get. And from what I hear, their open channels are similar to what RCN. They only give you the over-the-air stations.
They had quite a few of them that were listed, if I remember.
For QAM.
Like 2 months ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And they said that anything that wasn't, I guess, I think most of their high definition stuff was, aside from their premium stuff, you know, I believe that they were, they had a lot of stuff that you could still get over a regular TV without having to have a cable.
Yeah, well, the analog was open, like you said, so. Mm-hmm. But that's analog. Yeah. But if you don't care about HD digital, you know, then that's fine. Yeah. Then we also got another email from Neil Fields. He says, I'm catching up on your cast, and one thing struck me about the time when you removed all the tuners in the mid setup in order to remove one. All you have to do is use the arrows to highlight the tuner in question and hit D. He's talking about doing this in mid-TV setup.
In mid-TV setup,
you can
yep.
just delete one tuner and not have to delete. Yeah, aware of that, absolutely.
Right, yep, that's correct, yep. They give you an option to delete them all, but you can just hit the D button.
Yeah, if you just want to do one.
Yeah.
Because
if you have a keyboard hooked up to it, because if you don't have a keyboard hooked up to it,
yeah, it's going to be difficult.
Have one option that you can get access to with the remote.
Yeah, that might be difficult. It says, for commercial-free stations, there is a channel setting for that, at least from MythWeb, which is of my primary interface. Presumably, if this was properly propagated in those countries that have it, a default of commercial skipping on would make lots of sense because that data would avoid waste. It says, on QAM scans of newer versions, picking up a bunch of more channels, it appears major improvements have been made in the QAM scan with the recent version. For example, MPEG as opposed to ATSC channels, and some unencrypted SCTE channels show up. Sometimes the stuff it chooses isn't usable, but I have a similar addition of mostly standard F channels with the newer version. And in final analysis, though, the SD channels don't provide me anything interesting, as I already had HD for 90% of what was now visible. It says, thank you for your cast, and I look forward to catching up, Neil. A Myth user of approximately 5 years. Neil, thanks for the email. It's nice to hear from somebody. So folks want to send us some emails and tell us their setups, and especially in different countries too. I'm interested in what kind of setup you have in a different country. So by all means, let us know what you work and what you have, what works, what doesn't work. And we can pass that information on to other people, possibly in the same country as you. And that would be helpful. What else? What else? Dan, anything else?
I don't have anything else. I've been working on a new version of the website, by the way, so hopefully have that out sometime soon. Looking pretty good so far. Going all HTML5. It should be pretty nice when it's all said and done.
Nice. Looking forward to that. Yeah, we really didn't put too much stuff on our website. There's not much on there. Just some links.
No, we didn't.
Pretty basic, but, you know, who cares? It's all about the content, right?
Here's something else I wanted to bring up, too. If anybody has listened to Home Theater Geeks, It's a show that's been around. I got about 20 some odd episodes. It's on the Twit Network. I've emailed this guy. You know, email him if you get a chance and say, hey, try to have one of us on or something like that. He keeps having on all of these people doing Windows Media Center.
I know. I heard a couple episodes.
He's bypassing the fact that all of this other stuff exists out there. So I'm trying. I emailed him. I haven't heard back from him yet. I'm hoping I do because I want to show him that there all this other stuff exists out there. He had a guy on who has a company.
I heard that one.
About this here, Pat.
I heard this one.
$2,500 systems. These are based on Windows Media Center, okay? And the only way you could build a back-end system and that's it, and the only way you could get it anywhere else in your house is through an Xbox 360. How many Xbox 360s are you going to put around your house, okay? If you're not a gamer, for one, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it is a very expensive, you know, setup that they only sell to professional installers to do this stuff. It just seems absurd, you know? So, I mean, I want to say, you know, out of the box, they couldn't even support things like FLAC and all this stuff. So, I want to show him that we have all of this available, and we can do it for a hell of a lot less than $2,500, you know, to have it installed in somebody's house and this and that. So, you know, I mean, it was just insane. You know, I looked at the guy's website then, too, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
I saw that, too. I heard that episode, Dan, and I totally agree with you. It's ridiculous. People have fucking money. They don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
If you don't want it,
really, really
give it
like
to me.
The show. Don't, yeah. Exactly. Don't get me wrong. I really, really like the show. You know, the guy goes into a lot of, you know, audiophile stuff and a lot of, you know, based around like with 3D TV and whatnot coming out. He has on a lot of the people who pioneered a lot of these things when it comes to, like, you know, the pioneer Kuros. With their TVs, those plasmas, how they were, you know, he goes into the people creating, like, you know, the kind of like the precursor to DLP. You know, this guy created this thing back in like the 70s, and, you know, and he finally got it, you know, into production and patented, like, I think in like 84, and it basically is the technology that drives any DLP technology that's out there today. It's really something.
Yes, the show's called Home Theater Geeks. The host is Scott Wilkinson, and it's part
of
Twit
Network.
So yeah, it's
I really like the content that the guy puts out there.
twit.tv/HTG. And let me see, Scott's email. He's got his own website. It's called ultimateavmag.com.
Yes, ultimateavmag.com.
And he's really into some high expensive stuff he talks about in there.
Mm-hmm. But you're talking your audio files, your video files. You know, they had some other people on for server type stuff. And, you know, I'm trying to get in touch with him to get on there to say, hey, I want to come on and tell you about this other aspect of home theater PCs that's out there.
A whole nother world.
You know, that maybe a lot of people listening aren't familiar with.
Yeah, it seems that Ultimate AV Mag is a magazine, obviously. Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, he's actually associated with two different magazines, he mentions.
Yeah, here's his email.
And they're both...
Want to read his email? His email is Scott, with two T's, dot Wilkinson, WILKINSON, at SORC.com. That's SORC.com. Scott.Wilkinson at SORC.com. So shoot him an email. Tell him you'd like to hear us on that show. And we could spread the gospel of MIT-TV to him. And hopefully open some people's eyes. Yeah, I heard that episode, and yeah, my head was exploding too, Dan.
Yeah.
It wasn't just you.
Yeah. It made me just immediately... I sent him an email, I think, like, within, like, 10 minutes of hearing that, saying, hey, let me come on and talk about this other thing.
Yeah. Some people don't know. They've never been exposed to it, you know?
No, they don't.
Well, I'm all talked out. My throat's kind of hurting.
Yep.
My allergies are kicking in.
Mine's still coming off of that, so I'm struggling through it myself. So.
Yeah. So I hope you feel better.
I've been feeling, you know, from 2 days ago, you know, I mean, when I last talked to you about whether or not we were going to do it or not, it's complete, you know, turnaround. Still kind of working out the last little bit of it, but hopefully I'll be good to go, you know, in a day here, a day or two. I'll get my wife out of this mess, too.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening to the show. We appreciate you joining us, listening to us, putting up with our bullshit.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely. Take care, everybody.